It's Spoiler in Time, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Tom Merritt, and today we are going to spoil episode 4 of season 2 of The Office UK, episode 5 of season 8 of Game of Thrones, spoil a couple of things related to news bits around Avengers Endgame and an email. We're going to welcome current number one reigning champion Frog Pants movie draft team member Brian Ibbett. But before that, my co-host, ladies and gentlemen, Brian Brushwood.
Yeah, well deserved. Congratulations, Brian Ibbett. You guys have done the unthinkable. You are far and away in first place in our, I guess we'll do the sounder. Let's do the summer movie draft. How's it feel? How's it feel to be king of Smug Mountain?
It's going to feel really good for the next few weeks until Toy Story 4 comes out. And then I think then we've got a battle on our hands. But I do love the fact that, man, Endgame is just this unstoppable juggernaut of a film.
Yeah. I think at this point, Team Night Attack, we're out of the running. We needed Detective Pikachu to overperform. And at only $58 million, I don't think it's got the juice that we need. I think we're kind of hosed.
Long Shot made you $19.8 million, which for a $5 movie opening weekend, not bad. How will you feel if it ends up being the difference between you winning and losing?
I love that. Are you kidding? Because it felt like such a throwaway film when Scott and I were bidding on it in the auction, because nobody else wanted. It's like Long Shot. What? It's a Seth Rogen thing. Okay, I haven't heard of this. And we're basically going for scraps because we spent almost
$5 left and you used it all.
We had $5 left. Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I enjoyed it. We went and saw it. I contributed a little bit to that to those money totals. At least my AMC A-list account contributed to those totals. And I'm actually pretty happy that we ended up with that one. So sure.
This weekend, A Dog's Journey comes out for Grant and the Beerists.
And my really watch stop seeing those trailers.
Begins as Team Sword and Laser's first movie, John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum, hits theaters. And this is probably the one that will decide whether I have any shred of hope of catching Team John Trekker or Team Frog Pants based on how well it does opening weekend.
I mean, I think you guys have a lot of potential momentum there. I mean, John Wick, of course, a well-beloved franchise. More importantly, right after that, the 1-2 punch of Aladdin. Aladdin is the one you need to be watching. Yeah. Either we're ready.
Aladdin is the one I feel good about, right? John Wick probably needs to overperform for me. Aladdin just needs to not underperform, I think.
You think I
need to pay more attention to Aladdin, huh?
Yeah. I think John Wick, you know, what's the difference between $100 million and $150 million? Whereas the swing on Aladdin, we're talking about, $400 million versus $500 million.
It could make up for deficiencies in John Wick. No, you're absolutely right. Okay, I take it back. I need them all to do really well. Is really
and, and the success or failure of Aladdin really will dictate a lot of how The Lion King does too, I think.
You think?
Justin was asking, why on earth aren't they rolling out all of the music hits in the marketing for it? And I think
they just started to.
I mentioned that to Eileen, and she's like, "They are.
They just put
it's all over the place." I'm like, "I haven't seen it either." And then the next four commercials for it, I saw had the music in it, so I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're doing some, if they're holding back some like clever remixes, like maybe even the version of that we're seeing in the trailer won't be the final music version that we're gonna see. I don't know.
Why doesn't Ugly Dolls have any money listed here? Because I know it's out.
I think that's a technical issue, and I've alerted our team about it.
All right, it's just a glitch.
Because technically nobody saw it.
Because I think the link goes to the Grinch, so I think
it, they can't do negative money.
Exactly.
I see. Well, we got to do some triage first. So if you haven't seen Avengers Endgame and you care about spoilers about Avengers Endgame, you're a very interesting person, but you might want to turn away. I found this article on IO9 that quotes an interview with the Russo brothers with Real Blend, where they mentioned that there was no response from Tony Stark after Thanos says, "I am inevitable," in the original cut. And when they're in the editing bay, they look at it, they're like, "Man, we need a line there." And apparently Endgame's editor, Jeffrey Ford, says, "Well, why don't you have Tony Stark say, 'I am Iron Man'?" And then they had to go take Robert Downey Jr. out to dinner and convince him, because he's like, I don't know, guys, I don't want to have to get back in that emotional space and in the suit. And like, it sounds like a lot of work. But they eventually convinced him. And that line that was never planned for became one of the iconic lines everybody was talking about the next day.
Wow.
That's great. That's really cool. I love hearing stories like that, where kind of these happy accidents where things come together and it turns out to be one of the best parts of a film.
Yeah, well, I love stories of privileged actors saying how they don't want to do a thing, but then they get bought a dinner and they get talked into it. It's a great thing.
I want to know where the dinner was. It definitely
that
wasn't
my
like
takeaway from the story.
No,
Outback Steakhouse or something.
Yeah.
I get to the Bloomin' Onion if you get back in the suit.
Robert Downey Jr. ad-libbed the original I Am Iron Man line in the movie. He wasn't supposed to admit he was Iron Man, and he did it. And the tale goes, he did it in one of the takes, and they loved it and decided to lean into it.
Wow.
So both ends of that line.
Because that's a story changer. That's not just like a witty response.
They were going to hold that for the next movie, and they decided to just throw it in at the end.
Nice.
Then we got an email from Joe, who says, please address this in spoiler in time. Thank you, Joe, for directing your email to the correct place. I mean, please speculate wildly about the multiverse being the driving force for Phase 4 and how awesome that will be and how it brings in the X-Men and Fantastic Four, and maybe Kang will be the big bad.
I love the fact that Kang could be introduced into the MCU. Love that.
I mean, a lot to digest and break apart on all of that. I do like the idea that you guys know this is my white whale. All I want is a 1950s, 1960s based period piece Fantastic Four movie, and it would be great if the Fantastic Four was the beginning of its own MCU that, you know, maybe we see some crossover or some version of all that stuff like that. How great would that be?
That's a perfect way to do it. And then you don't have to say, well, where have they been this whole time?
Exactly.
Right. You could do it as they've been in this other universe. I'm just wondering how much of this multiverse stuff that we got in the Spider-Man trailer is just Mysterio's BS.
You
know,
correct.
We know he's BS. And
sure.
And it could be his way of saying,
we could have a spoiler for The Prestige, a case where he's BSing them, but it inspires Peter Parker to actually figure out a way to do what was not possible before.
Well, and I do kind of feel like Nick Fury would know if there wasn't a problem and Mysterio was telling him. I could be wrong about that, but I do feel like problems with the multiverse seem like a really natural way for this story to go after the events of Endgame.
Are you saying Nick Fury just wouldn't believe a guy who shows up with a fishbowl on his head and claims that he's from another universe? That,
I mean, a younger Nick Fury certainly wouldn't. I don't know. Maybe he gets soft in his old age.
Sure, whatever. All right. Let's go with that theory.
And the Eternals could play into multiverse somewhat, for sure. So, and I feel like the Eternals are going to be the driving force of our big bad, though, so maybe not Kang. I don't know.
Yeah, I want MODOK. I still want MODOK.
MODOK is happening, I believe, as an animated show produced by Kevin Smith's company.
Yeah, yeah. It's part of Patton Oswalt, I think.
Okay. Well, that's a good sign. Yeah.
Yeah. But I want him in the. I want a live action MODOK.
Why would you want that? He looks ridiculous.
Oh yeah, maybe if it's an animation, that means they don't put it in live action, though. Huh?
Right.
All right. Let's talk Game of Thrones. Probably. Well, you know, I go back and forth. The most divisive episode of Game of Thrones yet, although the Red Wedding, you know, Ned Stark getting killed. The only reason they weren't more divisive is because so many people had read the books and knew that that stuff was coming. This certainly nobody knew was coming. And it is, you know, without talking about our own emotional reactions or opinions of it, certainly a big change in the storyline for Daenerys to go from being the breaker of chains to the burner of women and children in King's Landing, and setting us up for the finale being a determination of who deserves the throne versus who can keep the throne, who can take the throne.
Yeah, Ibbet, do you want to jump in first? I have thoughts. I don't want to...
I'll get things out of the way first. The whole transformation of Daenerys, I've seen a lot of people saying, well, we've kind of seen it coming. We've seen it coming with this. And really, I'm holding off judgment until I see how she acts after this, because all we've had is setup. Will you stop the attack when the bell rings? Yeah. Oh, okay, sure. I'll do that. Whatever. It's not going to happen. And then crazy Daenerys. And I want to see the aftermath. I want to see crazy Daenerys in conversation. I want to see her interacting with presumably with Tyrion and Jon afterwards, and how that comes about. But I mean, they've been hinting about the Mad King, or not hinting, but they've been talking about the Mad King for such a long time that while it was a surprise to me, it didn't feel like as dramatic a shift in the character as it could have been.
Brian Brushwood.
I it's the weirdest thing. All I can say is this is what happens when you stop having novels to draw upon and now the TV writers are in charge. Everything becomes about the set piece. All the characters' motivations get collapsed. We see everybody become dumber without explanation. There was a time Tyrion was a pretty smart guy. Now he's a guy who just wanders around and horrified at the world. There was a time that there was a depth to Jaime that he might have been able to put into words, but instead we just see him go to find Cersei because it's time to find Cersei. There was a time that I suspect the Hound might have had some amazing visceral explanation for what satisfaction he's going to get out of destroying the mountain, but instead he clearly just sees this golem animated robot man and loses his life for it. And I guess Arya's job is to just wander around like it's 9/11. I don't know. Understand, all of this comes from a place of general positive feelings for this entire series. It is remarkable what they've done so far. They have earned the right to coast across the finish line, and I will take none of that away from them. Game of Thrones is legitimately one of the greatest series that has ever been on television. But what are they doing? What are you doing? What story are you even telling? I don't recognize any of the characters. Like, there was a hot second that I thought it might have been interesting. How great if we thought that Daenerys was going to use her unfair advantage of the dragons. Oh, but here she is reduced to just one dragon, and they're in a standoff because these scorpions are able to shoot them out of the sky. Maybe she would have to demonstrate the incredible diplomacy skills she developed on the other side of the planet. Nope, not going to get that. She's just going to be awesome and Captain Marvel it up and destroy everything. And then I don't know.
Well, I can only speak for myself, and my reaction to this episode was hinging around the moment where she stops and grimaces and then starts burning the town. At that point, my thought was, oh, she's going to go after King's Landing. She's going to go after Cersei. Cersei's standing on that balcony. She's going to take her dragon straight for Cersei, and in the blind rage of taking down Cersei, she's going to cause damage that will make things complex for her because she didn't think about it, right? And instead, I got what I felt was an unearned, I flipped. I no longer have a moral compass, and I'm enraged, and I'm going to burn everything. And Eileen and I talked about it quite a bit afterwards. Everything you need to believe that is there. It's all in the story, which goes back to my own theory that we're working from an outline without the underlying source material to inform it, and we're just not getting enough to make me really feel it. So yes, she talks about being alone. She talks about not having any support. She just lost Jorah, who's been the only constant for her, even when he was gone with the grayscale. Like, there was hope that he would come back. She feels like Jon has betrayed her because he is pushing her away. Like, all the pieces are there. She's a Targaryen. She has said she would burn cities to the ground before. Like, you can build a very logical on paper argument for why, like, Daenerys's moment there was entirely motivated and built up. And look, I've got an outline that shows you all the times that we supported what she was about to do, but I didn't feel it. You didn't make me feel it. You didn't give me those moments where I'm like, ooh, wow, I'm starting to doubt whether Daenerys is in her right mind. Like, just because she hadn't combed her hair or eaten a snack was not enough to make me believe that she was about to just lose everything and kill people. And
well, and you know,
I
what,
remember,
you know what?
Well, hold on. I just want to say one more thing. Back in when we were doing the Marine story, I remember complaining like, oh, it's taking so long to get Daenerys out of Marine. When can we hurry this up? But I'm glad we didn't. It was for my own good, because when she decided to go to Westeros for Marine, I felt like, oh man, she earned it. She has learned to be a leader. She was not a leader when she entered Karth, and she is a leader coming out of Marine, and I have been shown that. And this, you know, you can come up with excuses like maybe it's the writers, maybe it's they're rushing it. I don't know. But whatever the reason is, I personally am not feeling that the reasons why she would do this, even though I know intellectually they're all there.
I don't know that you even have to stretch too hard to make her a credible villain. I found myself weirdly, like, everybody disappointed me. The one thing I expect from Tyrion is some kind of smart anything, and I got none of that. The one thing I expect from Varys is seeing three steps ahead, and I got none of that. You got fried to a crisp right at the beginning. The one thing I expect from Cersei is playing the Game of Thrones well enough that she's a move ahead, but instead her whole game plan was to sit there and stare and hope that somebody shot the dragon. You could have made, and again, it's not for me to armchair quarterback. I don't know what they had to work with, but imagine how amazing it would be if after all the development we saw from Daenerys, it all boils down to, yeah, but you're not a boy and only boys can sit the throne. And imagine that rage. Imagine that as a transformative moment where she's like, screw everything, I'm going to set fire to it all. And then she goes to do it. And then imagine a somehow, imagine we see a bunch of tortured people dying or whatever. And then Cersei says, look, we all know that none of you guys are in love with me, but at the end of the day, I'm the goddamned ruler and I'm going to take care of this city. Imagine us rooting for Cersei against Daenerys and cheering at the end. That would have been phenomenal and incredible. And it would have been a tragic tale that strangely, you know, was about, I don't know, female empowerment and an effective playing of the Game of Thrones and all that stuff. But instead, I don't know, it just seemed like so much nonsense that I didn't buy any of it.
I mean, honestly, sure, you can armchair quarterback this all day. They could also take what you just said and do it poorly, and I would feel the same way, right? Yep. To me, the problem isn't necessarily like, well, they could have made a better interesting story doing this or that. For me, it was like, and this is why it's funny. I said my opinion about this episode has evolved over the 24 hours. Immediately after the episode, I hated it. I was like, no, I don't believe she would have done that. That's not where I was. Some of it was what I was doing, the same thing that I did with Endgame, which was I wanted this story and they told that story. Mm-hmm. And I had to get over that. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized, no, the only thing I can hold on to for sure that is solid is you didn't make me feel that moment.
Correct.
And maybe some of that is me saying, no, but I want Daenerys to be this kind of character. And they kept telling me, no, she's not that kind of character. But whoever's fault it is, doesn't matter. It didn't work for me. It didn't make me feel that moment.
This is the one thing.
If I fix that in my head and go, okay, I'm going to headcanon this and be like, let's pretend I did feel that moment. This is a pretty great episode in a lot of other ways, right? If I believe Daenerys has a justified, you know, mad terror, having dragons burn down King's Landing is crazy. The shooting they did on this is incredible. They actually built an entire fake Dubrovnik in Northern Ireland to be able to go in this. It is incredible what they did. Arya, again, smaller point of, I didn't really feel her making the change that she was supposed to with the Hound when the Hound says, you don't want to do this, revenge just eats you up. But that one, I had a little more ease in like, okay, but I can believe Arya would finally come to that conclusion, because if anyone could convince her, it would be the Hound. So again, if we click that and be like, okay, I'm going to believe that Arya has been like, what am I doing? No, revenge is not the way I should live. I'm going to change my life right now. It's my come to not revenge moment. Having her be our perspective character in getting out of King's Landing, kind of love that. It was a pretty incredible list of shootings. So there are things I was blinded to by my rage the first time looking through this that I didn't appreciate. But it still doesn't fix some of these other things. And I actually really liked Clegane Bowl. I thought that battle scene was enjoyable.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite parts of the thing. And to kind of underscore your point, I love it when a show makes you say, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming. But in order to do that, you've got to make it so I look back and say, wow, I didn't see that coming. But boy, there sure were a lot of signs.
But I should have.
I totally missed those signs. As opposed to, wow, I didn't see that coming, and that's not at all what that character would have done.
Well, and right. This is my hope going into the final episode, that mm-hmm. what I am feeling naturally is, fingers crossed, is what they meant for me to feel. Yeah, I maybe. Have lost my taste for the Game of Thrones. And I don't care who sits on that dumb chair.
Maybe you're going to get your Republic.
And maybe that's where we're going to end up. This is my last crossed fingers. Samwell Tarly sitting up saying like a president's a cool thing. And then us doing it that way. I don't know.
Is there still a throne, by the way? Did the throne get, do we know that the throne's all right?
Oh, well, we don't, but there were two aspects of this that harkened back to previous visions. One is Bran's vision. They used the shot of the shadow of Drogon over King's Landing when she's flying above it. And Bran saw that vision when he was the Three-Eyed Raven once before. And if you remember, when Dany goes into Carth, into the Wizard's Palace, she sees the vision of the throne room of King's Landing with a broken roof and snow, which we now know is not snow, it's ashes.
Right. So a couple of different things. I felt like they could have made it a stronger justification for Jaime to run to Cersei. Like when he left Brienne,
that was a last episode problem, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. When he left Brienne, he shouldn't
this
say.
This episode was great for Jaime, but I'm like, really? But why is he leaving Brienne? Like, I don't quite. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and you know, he says what? I'm a hateful person or whatever. Like, I feel like this would have been a stronger adventure watching him if he's like, hey, man, it's my nature. I can't. This is who I am. I'm in love with her. I'll always be in love with her. I'll do whatever.
Again, I mean, that is pretty much what he said. But the way he said it didn't convince me.
Right. Agreed. I'm speaking in feelings, not words necessarily. Euron Greyjoy. A weird fanboy, like, I'm the guy who killed Jaime Lannister, except you totally didn't, and he just marches off. I mean, it's like, all right.
Good for Euron. He died happy thinking it.
Sure.
only guy, by the way, to swim back from all those boats.
Yeah. I don't know.
Hero power.
I'll tell you who the
villain power.
I tell you who I feel for is everybody who named their child Daenerys over the last 8 years. Right. Yes. Whoopsie doodle. You named your daughter Hiroshima Pompeii 9/11.
Yeah.
Adolf.
I saw your tweet about that, which was hilarious. And then later on, I saw another one that was like a fake conversation that went, Arya, get down here. Daughter, my name's not Arya. It is now.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe after next episode, all the Daenerys's can go back to being Daenerys's. Who knows? But I mean, I love to usually speculate about what I think is going to happen next. I've got nothing. And I don't know if I'm just exhausted thinking about this last episode or if I'm just confused or what. But I at this point, my best guess is Jon Snow sits the throne because that seems to be Jon. Because we did see one of the things we did see was Jon. I actually got belief in Jon having the realization of I shouldn't be following Daenerys. Look at what is happening. Look at what she's doing. Like that worked for me. I'm like, okay, Jon has changed his mind during the course of this battle.
Yeah, but even then, even Jon disappointed me where I'm like, what are you doing? You're so afraid of being a leader that you're failing. This is all your fault, Jon. You could have stopped all of this and you didn't. Because you just want to shrug and say like, oh, well, she's my queen. What can I do?
Oh, no, I think that's giving John a disservice. It's not I'm I'm going to shrug. It's I must be loyal. Like that is a loyalty above everything. It's a very stark trait, I feel.
If I'm going to play the guessing game, I think we see Daenerys take the throne. Hi, mm-hmm. It's me, your new queen. Nothing you could do to stop me. I don't know if you noticed. I just 9/11'd you. I can picture one of those notes that Varys wrote makes its way to the maesters and word spreads and now everybody knows. And so it's a spontaneous uprising. So even though Jon Snow is principled and you know, wanting to, you know, stand beside his queen, the rest of the world says, nope.
Oh, yeah. I don't even think you have to say Jon Snow. We saw in this episode, Jon changes his mind. He is no longer loyal to her after what she has done. So he will gladly lead that army, I think, at this point.
Yeah. We're done hearing him say she's my queen.
I feel like that would be the boring, like if that's what happens, I'll be like, yeah, okay.
It's funny because that is like, I wanted something unpredictable and I did get that. Mm-hmm. But now that there's the looming possibility that that is what happens, that Jon takes the throne from Daenerys in this last episode, is like, oh, I hope they don't do it that way. Right. Yeah.
Man.
I heard that Benioff and Weiss have already booked a hotel for them and their wives to go to after this finale because they just want to black themselves out from the internet as we all freak out.
To hide?
You have to go to a hotel to do that? You can't just like...
Say they booked a hotel. They're going away, they say.
You just can't turn the Wi-Fi off in the house? Or
no, nah, they're leaving their house because, I don't know, maybe they're afraid of...
drive-bys.
Freaking
anything else, Brian?
Just Brian? General malaise.
What about the Clegane Bowl? Does anybody care about the Cleganes?
I mentioned that.
That was satisfying. Tom liked it. Unfortunately, it felt empty and hollow because, like, very clearly, that's not his brother. That's not the guy who tortured him. That's an animated shambling corpse. I didn't feel any of the hate that you know the Hound was expressing. And it's like, well, you're just committing suicide and doing it in a weird dance with a thing that used to be your brother.
I think that's his brother. I think he's reanimated, but I think that brother is exactly the way Clegane talked, but even before he was reanimated. And the fight on its own with nothing else, where you just, this is a zombie you can't stab in the brain and kill, was pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Did we talk about the death of Cersei and Jaime? I mean, we touched on it a little bit, but
touching.
What an opportunity lost. You know, she could have told. There have been times that Cersei and Jaime have been made to be very sympathetic to us, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine in similar, this is me armchair quarterbacking, but imagine the two of them, everything's trembling and running around, and she goes, maybe she tells a 2-minute story that's like, this isn't how I thought it would go. I thought it would be you and me and sunsets and our kids running around and, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, do a whole, like, make us remember the tragedy of their family, you know, and for a brief second say, well, you're still pieces of garbage, but man, oh man, you guys have seen some crap. And then, I don't know, a rock falls on them or something. But we didn't get that either.
I think Qyburn's death was pretty good.
Oh, that was great. I enjoyed that.
little homage to the Hulk, I feel like.
Yeah.
Right.
Right up to the side.
Well, we have a Hulk.
I think Tyrion's moment with Jaime was probably the best of the episode.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
Oh, yeah. Letting him out of the tent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
that was a good scene.
Yeah. So Tyrion just... not appearing in the back half of that episode was saying something. I wonder
Tyrion,
what it's
saying. Tyrion in the tent saying, one dwarf for the lives of 10,000 people. Why not? Mm-hmm. Great. Don't show him again. Just don't show him again. And I will assume that he's hiding because he knows that if Daenerys sees him and knows he released Jaime, he's dead. Don't have him out on the hill next to them. Like everything's okay.
Yeah.
And certainly him just kind of wandering into the city there was pretty, I don't know, felt pretty silly. Mm. Cause yeah, his his important role in that episode was not ring the bells. I mean, he could say that. He didn't need to be around when the bells were being ring, right? I still got it. We didn't need him for that. Although that does remind me, the dragon bursting out of the front of King's Landing was a pretty great shot too.
Mm-hmm. Great shot. One note. If you want the Golden Company, don't book Golden Corral instead.
Get more than 12 guys.
Yeah. It was a good attempt. It was a good attempt. I get where you're going with that.
It worked better when we did that joke.
They were dead meat.
Things.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
Bunch of steaks in the ground.
Steaks.
Trying to go with the Golden Corral thing, but I got nothing. No, the Golden Company ended up being pretty useless. That guy looked pretty weird running away, too. Like, really? You were the one in charge? You don't look like you're in charge.
There was a brief, but he did a great job of
standing around.
Well, or specifically. Just telegraphing, like, done with this-ness, you know? And when he dropped the sword, you know, I'm like, hells yeah, all of you drop your swords, you know? Like, I
the Golden Company? I didn't think the Golden Company.
Sorry, I think they were Lannisters, but they have golden, you know, clothing, whatever.
No, that I bought, because the Lannister army was like, I don't know, Cersei, I guess. We got no other choice. And at that point, with the dragon above and everything, they're like, yeah, you know what? Fine. I was maybe loyal to Tywin, but... I don't really care about this one.
I did like seeing the wildfire, you know, exploding in various spots around King's Landing. The green fire that we saw back at the battle.
That could
be
your best bet for a surprise in the next episode. Is that there's still more of that to come, and people get destroyed by it.
Even in death, she set a sabotage for Daenerys.
Well, no, because the Mad King hit it throughout the city, and they didn't know exactly where. Nurse. So some of that was going off. Is probably what the Mad King hid that nobody knew it was there. Because he was going to burn the entire city with wildfire.
Yeah.
And Jaime stopped him.
So we all thought it was a bad show, right?
It's a good action show.
Sure.
It's a good 24 style show.
That's not the way I put things. There were certainly parts of it that I liked. That moment with Daenerys was not satisfying for me, and I have to just bracket it off if I'm going to enjoy anything about that episode.
It was an engaging hour with some disappointing moments that for me could get redeemed partially in how they follow it up next week.
So I guess, and that leads up to the real thought is it's not too late. They could pull off a magic trick and maybe next week.
Sure.
Like, they do it. And I'm like, oh my God, I never saw any of this coming. Not in a million years. Everything was laid out in front of us the whole time. How
Cersei's
did we all miss this?
Cersei's baby comes crawling out through the rubble.
Daenerys deciding to burn King's Landing is a little bit like telling me 2 and 2 is 5. So, yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right. We're going to talk about The Office UK episode 4. Brian Ibbett, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it, man.
That's right. I don't want to get any spoilers on The Office. I don't know. I don't know who's going to live or die on that show, and I don't want any. Thanks for having me, guys. It's
dude, great to see you, man. Everybody go over to Coverville and enjoy Brian Ibbett's amazement.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. I tell you what I enjoyed the least this week, honestly, was this episode of The Office.
Oh, like, God, I'm so glad to hear you say that. I didn't want to be the one to say it.
I'm actually so glad to hear you say that, because I'm like, I didn't expect you to love it, but I was he probably liked it fine. But
okay, so 26 minutes, and like at minute 19, 20, I'm just like, am I watching an actual Office? I don't. I'm not, what is any, and then finally it led up to a like, oh, I get it. This is going to be the episode where he spectacularly fails to do
his presentation. Right.
Yeah. Also, he failed to fail hard enough to amuse me on his presentation.
Yeah. I mean, the first part where like David gets admonished for failing to pay an employee and just tries to excuse his way out of it. I'm like, okay, I've seen this joke before. You know, and that's where I'm like, maybe if this is your like, oh, I love every time they make Brent, you know, do that, then that's fine. You know, Rachel and Tim upsetting Dawn and Gareth. We've been around that bend before. Again, if you find that situation hilarious, maybe you love seeing it another time. But the second half with the presentation just, I was just like, okay, like, is that that bad? It's not good either. And there's no reaction from the crowd. That's my reaction right there.
Yeah. Yep. Nope. I have nothing to add to any of that. It was, it was an episode of The Office.
It was. My only addition is that maybe The Best by Tina Turner had not been used in as many hilarious positions as it has now and would have played better.
Maybe. I mean, well, but then again, we're back to that question of like, what's it like to look at this with fresh eyes? Mm-hmm.
But it's 17 years later, so this is what we got.
Yeah,
I honestly really don't have anything else to say about this particular one.
You and me both. We wrap this up and go into a little bit of after talk. Thank you to all of our beautiful patrons. Head on over to patreon.com/cordkillers. Throw us some cash. You'll get your very own super secret RSS feed, and you'll be able to hear what we say about you when nobody's listening.
That's right. Talk to you next time.
Hopes you have enjoyed this program.